Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. Hey guys, welcome back to the Leverage Podcast. This is your host, Robbie Kramer. And today we have a really awesome guest on by the name of Mark Singh. Welcome, Mark. How are you? Hey,
appreciate you having me, Robbie. Excited to be here.
Yeah, man. And we're going to be talking about some NLP stuff today. He's a world-renowned dating coach with a huge background in NLP on training men, how to attract women, create their ideal lifestyle. And how long have you been in the business, man?
I've been doing NLP for about 10 years. And what I do specifically is I help get the inner stuff in men's heads together. Not so much the hypnotizing women in the coffee shop kind of thing. I help get kind of their inner stuff together, and I use NLP programming and processes to do that. So oftentimes men will come to me and they're like, I just don't know what's wrong with me. You know, my friend looks exactly like me, has the exact same attributes, and he gets all the girls and I don't. What the heck is going on? And typically it's some kind of meta programming going on in your head that, you know, isn't conducive to attracting women. So that's typically what I work on with my clients.
Gotcha. And going back to the coffee shop thing, I know there's, you know, so I've been in this business for, you know, over a decade. And when I first heard NLP, it was, I think, by Ross Jeffries and guys running around and trying to hypnotize women and do a bunch of crazy shit, which I obviously know isn't what you do. But just for the listeners out there who are like, oh, is that what this is? It's definitely not.
It's interesting. There's definitely some things that I do teach my clients where, you know, hidden suggestions and hidden commands and stuff like that. But ultimately what I always say is, even if you hypnotize her for the time it takes for her to suck your dick, when she's done, she's going to find out who you really are. So might as well work on yourself and, you know, get that all correct before, you know, it's manipulation and I just not really into that. And frankly, it's not nearly as effective as cleaning up the mechanism, because when you get that working right, then, you know, you're effective for the rest of your life, not just during that time that she's in a mild state of hypnosis.
Totally. And my brief kind of experience with NLP was through Landmark Education, where they use a lot of NLP in their training technology. I didn't realize they were using NLP, but then afterwards I found out that, I guess, Werner Erhard is like one of the, he basically founded a lot of their a lot of their stuff, and he was a big NLP guy. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with that at all, but hopefully I'll have some common language as we go through this. But tell us, how'd you kind of get into all this stuff? You know, give us your story.
Yeah, so my story is kind of interesting. I actually used to live in Japan, and I understand you're living abroad right now too, correct?
Yeah, I'm in Kiev, Ukraine.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, so I lived in Japan. Do you speak, what is it, Russian? What do they speak over there?
Half the country, or 3/4 of the country speaks Russian. And then in Western Ukraine, they speak Ukrainian. And I'm learning Russian, but I'm terrible and don't really need it. But it's fun to learn.
So they speak English?
The younger people tend to.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Dude, in Japan, nobody speaks English. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. You know, I went over there assuming that they would, and I very quickly learned when I went to go shopping for some milk, I walked in and I said, hey, where's the milk? They're just like, we have no idea what you're talking about, buddy. You got to learn some Japanese. So anyway, I was a Japanese translator, and I was on stage and I had a panic attack. And I've been dealing with anxiety since I was a child, kind of runs in my family. And I had to get yanked off the stage, essentially, and kind of was laughed off the stage in a way. And it was a really traumatic event for me. So what I did is I researched, you know, ways to reduce anxiety, and NLP came up. And I hired an NLP coach, and he helped me to deal with that anxiety, deal with the panic attacks. And I was able to not only become a translator again in that respect, but I was hired on in a translation company, and I moved to Hawaii, where I lived for 3 years doing translation, and then kind of got mixed up in the pickup game there, and then started helping guys like with what I knew about NLP, became a practitioner, and that's kind of how it manifested. So as most things, it started with the tragedy and was able to get through it. And I just believe in it so much. You know, I've seen the amazing results it had in my life as well as the life of my clients. So I'm all about it.
Gotcha. So you didn't get into NLP for pickup. It was for translation and the panic attack you had.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you quickly realize like, wow, you know, pickup is all about fixing the inner turmoil that's going on within you, because women are quite literally designed to just talk to you and see within you, you know, what your value is, what your confidence is. And that's all, you know, meta programming. And your meta programming is written within the first 7 years of your life. So much of it is not of your choice unless mm-hmm. you consciously go in and rewrite that stuff. Many of us are dealing with, you know, messed up programs that aren't conducive to attracting women. And that's why 80% of guys don't get any girls and only 20% of guys actually do. Typically it's belief systems, you know, attitudes and the way you interact with women, which is all, again, called metaprogramming.
Gotcha. So what, are there any sort of metaprograms that you see kind of running in the majority of the guys you work with over and over that you've got to clear out in like a systematic format?
Yeah. Many of my clients deal with shame, unworthiness. A big thing is approach anxiety. Either they've had a bad event happen or they feel it's wrong. They don't want to inconvenience the woman. Their perspective on it is often skewed. And of course, you know, I also teach a more tactical element to my teaching, which is what to talk about in the first conversation, how to build attraction, how to lead that attraction, you know, to an interaction where you're getting what you came into the set in the first place to get, which is either a phone number, whatever, an Insta date, a makeout session, whatever your purpose is. You know, I teach them tactically how to do that, and through NLP, give them the confidence and tools to execute it effectively where she's actually getting attracted to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that some guys, especially the ones that tend to be way more analytical, will kind of obsess over the what to say. And I think it's good to give them something, of course. I kind of give my guys like a little, I call it approach training wheels, you know, some basic stuff you can kind of do if your just mind goes completely blank, because that's kind of what happens the first few times when you do it. You know, you're so nervous. There's so much anxiety running. Like you just completely clam up and go into that, you know, fight, flight or freeze sort of reaction.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm curious, what sort of, you know, if to a guy who's kind of experiencing that, what would you tell him?
Well, initially we want to get them in a positive feedback loop. So we don't want them to try to go in and get the touchdown right off the bat, you know? So typically what I say is to just open and abort. And with the really hard cases, I'll have them just, ask for directions, for example. I mean, this is really hard cases. Give a compliment, give good energy. I tell them it's all about the energy that you bring them to be a go giver. So initially what I say is go up, give good energy. And then obviously if you do get into a conversation, I have a series of tactics that I lead them through. I'll just give you an example off the top of my head. If she were to ask you, well, what do you do for a living? I give them three steps to basically answer that. And the first thing you want to do is kind of make them laugh. So make it something that cannot possibly be true. Mm-hmm. So what I always say is, oh, I'm a famous ass model.
Okay.
And they say, and the girl will be like, what the hell? And I'll be like, yeah, this ass is famous on 7 continents. Actually, there's a big picture of my ass in Times Square right now, 200 feet by 200 feet. Do not pinch this thing because this is my livelihood. And if I get a bruise on it, you are going to affect my paycheck. She laughs, ha ha ha. Mm-hmm. And then I'll tell her the real thing. Well, I'm an NLP coach. Do you know what NLP is? And she'll say, no, what is that? I'll say it's neuro-linguistic programming. And then I'll tell her the story that I just told you about what happened to me in Japan. And I call that your story of becoming. And as you know, women operate on the emotional level. That's how attraction is generated. So if you can tell a story about how you became what you are with the ups and downs and the perseverance and the ambition and the failure, and then, hey, I got through it and I was a Japanese translator and it all worked out. Now I'm an NLP coach. She can really feel a bond with you, you know, in that time that generates attraction. Then I teach them how to do it back to her. You know, bunches of other types of tactics. Like, do you like to travel? She says yes. And you push her away. You say, travel over there. You know, how to be a challenge. There's all kinds of stuff I teach. But really, initially, we just got to get the guy to go up to her, to go up and talk to her. And that usually starts within their brain. So that's where the NLP process is most utilized.
Gotcha. I'm curious, did NLP help you much in terms of learning Japanese, or you were already kind of fluent in translating at that point?
I was already fluent, and that's a good question. I've never thought about that because, dude, I'm horrible at languages.
Really? Well, how'd you learn Japanese? Because that's fucking hard. That's like a level 3 language if you speak English, right? Because you have to learn how to read and pronounce and how to write those crazy characters, right? Mm-hmm.
Dude, fuck. Brute freaking effort, man. I studied, like, there was a time when I was studying 16 hours a day for, I think it was 6 months to pass the Japanese language proficiency test. It's called the Nihongo Noryoku Shiken, and I got level 2 certification, which allowed me to be a translator in Hawaii. But man, I do not have a talent for languages, so it was brute force. But could NLP help? I suppose so. I never really thought about that. It's a very good question.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it since, it's called neuro-linguistic programming. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, dude. Why did I ever think of that? You should leverage that shit. Somehow.
Yeah, maybe. Sure. Because I'm learning Russian, and it's,
hard.
It's got to be easier than Japanese, though. But, I mean, I've been at it for maybe, I don't know, 6 to 8 months, and, you know, an hour a day. But I can order at a restaurant now. That's about it.
Ask you, how do you game girls out there, like, when you don't speak their language? Because to me, it's like, when I tried to speak in their language and I wasn't that good at it, it like lowered my value,
right?
To which, how do you deal with that?
Well, I think you don't really need it at all, you know, when you're approaching girls out here. If they speak no English, then it's gonna be tough, you know. I've definitely hooked up with a lot of girls that speak no English, but it's usually through a social circle type of setting and not cold approach. Like, I've gotten phone numbers from cold approach when they speak no English, just by kind of, you know,
sign language,
gesturing and sign language, and just you know, basically pointing, you, me, we go eat coffee, drink, you know, we fall in love, right? Make a little love sign on my on my chest, which surprisingly works, just because you get, it's such a value bomb being, you know, an English speaker here. Because they grow up with the culture of, U.S. culture, a lot of culture from the U.K. as well. So when they hear you speaking English, they're like, ooh, wow, maybe green card. Oh, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Dude, one of the hottest girls I ever dated in my life was a Russian in Japan. She spoke no English. I spoke obviously no Russian. So we spoke Japanese together.
Amazing.
It was really crazy because they hire tons of Russian and Eastern European girls to come over there. It's called Mizu Shobai, and basically they're just paid to sit and talk with Japanese businessmen, and they make bank doing that.
Yeah.
So you'll see some of the hottest girls in your life. You'll be like, oh my God, there's a 10 just walking around in Japan on the streets. It's really crazy. It's interesting.
Crazy. Yeah. Have you ever been to Ukraine or Russia?
No, man, but I want to go after that experience.
It's just crazy the amount of talent over here. You just walk,
I bet.
You walk down the street and you break your neck like 4 times in 50 feet from just, you know, turning to see beautiful women.
And you're telling me that the ability to speak English is a value bomb, so it's like pretty easy over there?
It's insanely easy compared to other places I've been. So the girls, it's easy in the sense where it's easy to get attraction, but it's tougher to, I guess, to close, because the girls have amazing bullshit detectors. And if you're not confident, or they think you're just a sex tourist, you can be a sex tourist and be honest about it, and they'll think it's funny, and a lot of them will still hook up with you. But if internally, you know, you're not kind of firing on all cylinders, they'll pick up on all of your insecurities and they'll just tear you to pieces. So it's a great place to practice as well, because you'll get that, you know, they act as a great mirror for your level of awareness and consciousness and confidence. Yeah. And if you're not, like, you're going to strike out hard.
Mm.
So, but yeah, I definitely, recommend come checking it out as soon as you can. And I was going to ask, so in terms of one of the things I like to ask my guests on here, because we discuss a lot of the things around travel, and just being the type of guy who, you obviously work for yourself, you know, you started a business. What kind of got you out of the bubble of you know, staying in America, working a 9-to-5. How'd you get over to Japan and how'd that all come to be?
Well, I went over there initially to work as an English teacher through this thing called JET program. Mm-hmm. And so I was an English teacher in middle schools, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade for a couple of years.
How old were you?
And 25 is when I went first went over there. And I remember there's this line in The Endless Summer. I grew up in Newport Beach, California. You're from California too, aren't you?
No way. Yeah, I actually grew up in Huntington.
No way.
what high school? Did you go to CDM or?
No, I went to Woodbridge High School in Irvine, basically grew up there in Costa Mesa. That's crazy, man.
Funny, dude.
That's funny.
Yeah. 10 minutes away. World. I went to Marina High.
Yeah, that's crazy. So remember Endless Summer back in the 90s? Yep. I don't know how old you are.
Yeah.
Anyway, so one of the lines was mention 9-to-5 job to this guy and he turns pale. And I remember like so resonating with them, like, yeah, like I don't want a 9-to-5 job. So I've always been kind of one of those guys that, you know, strikes out on my own, marches to the beat of my own drum. So I was like, hell, let's go to Japan. Let's do this. It's, you know, so different from the United States, yet it's still a first world country. And then, I was terrible.
Sorry, cutting you off, but you, did you graduate college and I'm guessing around 22?
Yeah.
And then what did you do for those 3 years in between?
I drove strippers, actually. I was a bodyguard for strippers and yeah, that was interesting. Yeah.
Wait, we got to hear more about that.
Yeah. In Huntington, actually, there's a big business for that, dude. Yeah. I had a gun held to my head and that was about the time I was like, all right, I should probably do something else.
No shit.
But,
how'd you get into that?
Oh man, my friend's like, hey bro, you could make tons of money driving strippers. I was like, let's do this. Didn't know how to fight.
My buddy did that too. I guess it was like a Huntington thing. Like, yeah. Like, what the fuck? I'm like, you've never been to a strip club. Like, we went to like one strip club when we turned 18. Yeah. And like, okay, so you're doing that.
Yeah. And so like I was going to OCC, Orange Coast College, right? Because I went to UC Santa Cruz.
Right.
And I failed poetry, so I needed some more credit. So I took a drumming class and met this Japanese dude. And he's like, you should go live in Japan. And I was like, hell yeah, let's go do this. So that's kind of how it happened. Went to Japan. Then my buddy lived in Hawaii. And then I was in Hawaii. And now I'm in Colorado. So yeah, I like to live in a bunch of different places for sure.
One more question about the stripper thing. So that had to have an interesting impact kind of on your personal journey when it came to women, right? Like were you what would have happened to me if I was in your shoes? I would have been driving these strippers around wanting to bang them all the time and having no clue what the fuck to do. Yeah,
it's like, curious. How much do I get into this right now is what I'm questioning myself. There was some banging going on, but probably should have kept it in my pants.
Okay.
I guess I could say banging brings drama. Man, it's just a drama pool, bro. And it's like, it was terrible. Yeah, I shouldn't have done that. It was a bad mistake, but you know.
Well, whatever. I mean, come on. It's one of the perks of the job.
Yeah. I've seen some shit, bro. I've seen I saw the door open. There's this dude standing there, a guy, like a dude, a hairy dude with a mustache. He looked like a cop, standing there in high heels, garter belt with the stockings, a dildo hanging off the front of him. And he's just all high on cocaine, dude. His lips were all like black and he's just like, come on in, come in, come in. And I was like, all right, go on in there. I'll be out here. If you need something, you let me know.
Jesus.
I don't know what I can do, but I'll try.
Yeah. My friend actually made a short film about being a driver for strippers and crazy situation. I'll send you the clip later on. But yeah, I mean,
this podcast is going a different direction than I expected, but I like it, dude.
Yeah.
I'm fired up on this.
Yeah, we can talk about anything on here. Mm-hmm. And you did that for how long?
I think a couple years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, you only work on whatever Friday, Saturday night. And then, you know, when I was a kid back then, I was 22, 23, I was making $4,000 a month and thought I was just balling out of my mind.
Fuck.
And had my lowered Honda Civic, you know, on 18-inch rims.
Like, you went that route. I had my lifted GMC Suburban on 35s.
Oh my God.
You had to go.
Huntington
Beach, yep. white collar lifted trucks, bro.
Yeah. Did you surf too?
I didn't. I played golf in high school and college, but there was a crew of like golfer lifted truck guys too, so it didn't really matter.
Hell yeah, I love it.
So funny, just the culture and like the in Orange County is just so strange, you know?
Yeah, like, it really is.
But
really
okay, so you're driving strippers around. Mm. You know, luckily it sounds like you stayed out of trouble mostly, because that could be a dangerous sort of job. And then, what, you just wanted like a total change and like, I want to travel.
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're young in your 20s, you want to get after it and go have adventures. Right. And, I'm 42 now. So this was quite, okay. In my past. This was like 2003. How old are you?
I'm 36. So,
okay. Yeah. Okay. So we were probably in the OC around the same time for sure.
Yep.
And, I just wanted to have that adventure and, you know, wanted to work for myself. And I've delved, obviously I had a successful seduction brand, but the NLP stuff is just the bomb, because, you know, with one session, a client can come to me with an issue, and then one session, by the end of the session, he's like, I literally cannot feel the same emotion that I came to you with. I'm like, try to feel the emotion. I cannot feel it. It works that quickly. And another thing is, I had a big fear of needles, because after my dad died when I was 10, I was held down by a nurse to get blood taken from me. And I had a major phobia of needles for a long time. And with one NLP session, I got over my fear of needles. I'm able to give blood anytime now, whereas before, if I even saw a hospital room, I would like almost pass out. Wow. So it's super powerful. And that's why I like it, because it's kind of like, go after, you know, use the most effective thing. Like, let's not bullshit around. Like, let's get this done and get this issue solved in the fastest amount of time possible. And I believe NLP is the answer for that.
And what was the process of becoming an NLP trainer, practitioner, you know, getting, I don't know if it, I know there's a process you have to go through, right, for that, to learn it?
Well, you don't necessarily have to go through that process. You know, it's not like a bachelor's degree or anything like that. But right. My mentor is a master practitioner, and I'm certified under him, as it were. But do I have a diploma on the wall that says anything? No, honestly, I don't.
Yeah, I didn't mean to say. I know they don't really have that. Yeah. That'll be. But yeah, usually you just train from someone, right?
Yeah. So I was mentored by him. Absolutely amazing guy. And I still work with him to this day. It's amazing how many issues you have when you really dig deep. For you sure. Just keep finding shit. But when you solve one thing, there, it's like a domino effect. A lot of other things get solved. But you know, I'm an overachiever like you are. I like to leverage everything I can. So I mean, I want to rule the world, man. So I'm going for it and doing working on every possible thing I can, and it works.
Now I'm curious. So would you say that NLP is the most effective at kind of going after fears or traumas or past experience, stuff like that?
Trauma, yes. Trauma is fears. Yes. It's extreme. I don't know about most effective, cause I'm not familiar with, I do have a bachelor's degree in psychology, but I'm not familiar with, like, you know, other forms of cognitive behavioral therapy. To the extent where I can say it's better than going to a psychiatrist or better than going to a past life regressionist or a hypnosis, you know, expert. But I will say that trauma specifically, issues specifically, and I found with women specifically, it's retardedly effective. I mean, that's why, you know, I'm very busy, is because a lot of guys are like, you know, coming to me. I get a lot of referrals, and it's been really effective for myself as well, because I was a hard case. You know, when I was in my early 20s, banging a stripper was like the highlight of my life in my 20s. So,
sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the biggest fear you had to overcome when it came to women?
That's a good question. Approach anxiety. And specifically, I was worried about what other people were thinking of me. So if she rejected me in front of a crowd, then I was afraid, you know, I would lose status. And that's literally a anthropological phenomenon, because, you know, as your listeners know, and obviously, you know, we have tribal community based systems in our brain, to which if you are rejected by a hot female, you could literally lose your life. You could lose your reputation and die. You could lose your survival. So I think being afraid of what other people think is a very natural fear, but in today's society, it's absolutely and completely irrelevant. And, you know, it just doesn't hold water. So once we're able to show the subconscious mind that that's true, then approach anxiety, it can be lifted and you can approach freely without the fear of rejection. And compounding that with tactics and skills, like I said earlier, you know, those initial tactics and skills to not get yourself in a situation where the chances of rejection are high, that's also the intelligent way to pursue it, in my opinion.
Right. For sure. And it's, you know, just the act of approaching and realizing you're not going to die and you're not going to be booted from the the tribe, right?
Yeah.
And left out in the wilderness to to be eaten by wolves, right? Yeah. Just that experience can be so liberating for guys. You know, I know clients who would rather face bullets than actually approach a girl. Like guys who've been in the army and, you know, in war, they're like, dude, this is, I'd rather be in the battlefield. This is fucking way tougher to talk to this girl.
So, what was the, there's some like statistic out there that most people would rather die than public speak.
Oh yeah. It's a bigger fear than death. And it's for the same reasons, right? It's for that social ostracization. Yeah. And, you know, at least, I don't know, but at least dying would be a little bit faster and easier, it sounds like. Yeah, but I guess that's what you experienced during your panic attack, right? When you were up there.
Yeah, that was, oh my God, man, that was the most horrible thing I've ever been through in my life. And it wasn't just an isolated incident. I was dealing with it for quite a long time before I reached out for help. And I really thought I was going to lose my mind. There was one time I was eating breakfast and I literally thought I was going to lose my mind and just die right there because of the fear, anxiety, and pure panic that I felt. And it's amazing because now I'm so mellow and not anxious. And it's almost like, man, I can't believe I used to feel that way.
And that was horrible. The fear of like an upcoming thing you had to do?
Like yeah, you know, that's a good question. It was the fear of the fear, right? So I had a panic attack during one of these sessions in front of a public audience. And then every time after that, I would fear the panic attack. Right. So I wouldn't be able to sleep many days before. I wouldn't be able to eat. I looked like a skeleton. I looked absolutely horrible. I was short short and just angry. And it was terrible. It was the worst time of my life. But oftentimes, some of your biggest, you know, crosses can be your biggest gifts. And literally, I think that whole anxiety thing that I dealt with in Japan was the greatest thing that ever happened to me, because I feel as far as you go down, you can propel yourself that much further up, you know, up the ladder of success. So I really view it as a gift that was given to me in the end.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview the other day, and they said that a panic attack is basically just your brain telling you to wake up and, you know, have a look around because something's slightly off. And I thought that was interesting.
Because yeah, that is interesting.
Right? Like it's shaking you. I don't even know if I've had a panic attack. I feel like I've had a glimpse of one where it's just like that feeling where, for me, it was, I don't know, I just had this like insane kind of wave kind of go through my brain. I couldn't move. Like I was like, you know, it was, so I don't know if that kind of describes it for you, but obviously, it was very short lived and it feels worse than dying, people say, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, well, I don't know what dying's like quite yet, thankfully.
feels like you're going to die, sorry.
Man, it's horrible. You just want to get out of the situation, and it's absolutely, absolutely horrible. And, you know, we think that it happened because of some of the things that, well, I do know it happened because of some trauma in my childhood. Like I said, my father died when I was 10. My mom, I started insulting myself, and my mom said, "What's wrong with this kid?" She took me to a psychiatrist. Psychiatrist ordered blood work. I didn't know I was going to get blood taken from me, and they held me down on the table to take my blood. So that was part of it, as well as a few other incidences that happened, you know, in my early childhood. And it's amazing, you know, because these things happen oftentimes when you're an infant, when you're a toddler, before you can even remember what happened. You're getting shit that's being handed to you, and your programs are being written around it. So you just come across some people that are like so socially inept, and some people who are so unable to attract women or whatever the case may be. And oftentimes, you know, it's not their fault. And that's that's kind of why I can have compassion for most people, no matter how lame or douchebaggy they may be. Sure. It's because I understand that, like, it's probably something they had no control over. Now, that's not to say that people aren't responsible for their actions. And that's definitely not to say that you can't improve and work on yourself. I think we all owe it to each other to do our best. But many times people don't even know what's holding them back because it's so early in their lives. Little kids like that are extremely impressionable. Anything you say, it leaves a mark on them. So be careful what you say to children.
Yeah, man. It's crazy. And a lot of the time too, they say that those memories, you know, your brain will just bury them. So you don't even remember what happened. Mm-hmm. You'll have no idea. You'll just have this, you know, I guess a blockage or whatever you want to call it.
And the interesting thing too, is you actually don't need to know what happened. And oftentimes when I do NLP processes with my clients, I tell them, you know, throw a blanket over the incident. You don't need to know what happened. In fact, I don't want you to know what happened, but it's there. And I want you to tell me, you know, the negative emotions that came from it. And they're right there. They're like fear, anxiety, jealousy, rage. They can name all these negative emotions. And then we go through to, you know, basically clean up that incident as well as other incidences that happened throughout their lifetime.
Gotcha. And how long does the process take typically? I mean, I'm sure it's dependent from person to person.
It depends. So typically, you know, there's different processes that I use in the entire process. So if you're asking about, you know, how long does it take for what, like, guys to wake up with a girl on their dick?
I'm not sure what I'm asking, but sure. I mean, it's so case dependent, but
oh my God. So typically my clients, one session will help tremendously, but if they're serious about doing it, then I typically recommend about 4 sessions per month. And in a session, we'll do at least one, usually 2 NLP processes, as well as tactical stuff, like, you know, all the stuff we've been talking about: approaching, building attraction, qualifying, getting a phone number, texting, first date, all the stuff I've created through the years, and my team has created. I definitely teach to them, and it's amazing how little guys know sometimes. And I always tell them, it's you know, I lived in Japan. Well, the Japanese drive test is, you take the drive test, but they don't tell you the rules. So the first 5 times you take the drive test, you fail, and it's $50 each time. So it's like guaranteed $250 just to get your driver's license. So I often compare women to a Japanese drive test. You're not told the rules. Sure. Unless you actively go listen to podcasts like yours, or you know, research other companies like Liam's and stuff like that. But if you're just born like we were as dudes, and, you know, especially as old as we are, no one ever pulled us aside and said, okay, this is how you attract a woman, because attracting a woman is a very counterintuitive thing. So of course you're going to fail. You don't know the rules. So I really enjoy teaching guys how value works, how frame control works, how, you know, shit tests and requests and all these different concepts that the community has created. I love teaching that to them, because it's like you get all these amazing epiphanies, and then they, you know, they get really fast results with women soon after they start working with a coach like myself.
Very cool. And for you, so you were, now you're back in Colorado, you said, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm just north of Denver.
Okay. And how do you, what's kind of your lifestyle out there? Are you single, relationship?
So, yeah, I actually have the love of my life, man. I actually found her, and we're 15 weeks pregnant. Just go ahead and announce it right now. I haven't really told many people. So, yeah.
Congrats,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, just the most amazing girl ever, you know. One of my other clients said, you know, I have this woman, and when I'm with her, it feels like I'm home. And that's kind of how it feels with her. So as I said, I'm 42. I definitely had my fun, you know, definitely went nuts, kind of like what you're doing now. And, but I found that girl. And, but that being said, on Thursday nights, I still do teach infield, to clients here in the Denver area, and take them out. And the girlfriend knows all about that. I'm allowed to do everything but, you know, the physical stuff and get phone numbers. And it's fun because I always try to, my goal is to like get girls to like beg me for things, like, give me your phone number, or let's come to my place, and having that non-outcome dependent way of gaming that I've created since I am in a relationship, it's actually really strengthened my game. It's like, it's insane. Right. And I know you experienced that too with your situation. So it's been very good, and I really enjoy it.
That's awesome, man. And I think it's so important for guys to go through that. I don't know, you can call it the player stage or the male slut stage or whatever. Yep. And I feel like, you know, I'm 36 and I feel like I just kind of went through it, and I spent so much time, my, you know, basically all my 20s kind of in one long-term relationship after another. And even though I was studying pickup and teaching pickup, I wasn't ever really single long enough to feel like I was, you know, going kind of getting my rocks off or whatever you want to call it. And there's so many guys that I feel like they don't go through that stage, which stifles their ability to attract, you know, the type of women they really want.
Yep.
And then they settle down with one that they think is amazing. And then slowly she kind of turns them into a beta male provider. And then, and then, you know, maybe they have a couple kids, and then bam, she leaves them for, you know, because it's fucking brutal. But,
yeah,
you know, that's super cool that you very rarely talk to guys who kind of made it through their, you know, their 20s or 30s and then found, well, usually they do find something amazing because they put in that work.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And I always tell my clients, you know, you have to have quantity first to get quality.
Exactly.
You have to have that experience. And it's great because my clients get excited. They're like, really? I get to have sex with tons of girls. I'm like, yeah, bro, if you want. That's the way to get good at this, so that when the freaking 10 comes along and crosses your path, you have the skill set to be able to get her. It's not just a one-time thing. This is like, this is going to take, you know, several years, lots of practice, lots of different girls. And it's a skill set to which you're going to develop. And obviously, as you know, you know, it's not only going to help you with girls, but also making more money, being better in business, being a good communicator, being able to come on a podcast, you know, and host a podcast like you do, and be so eloquent and easy to relate to people. These are all skills that you get by getting good with women. So there's so many extra benefits to it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I was such a kind of shy, just kind of goofy kid before I got in all this stuff.
And now I've heard stories about what you're doing now, brother. You're doing very well for yourself.
I appreciate that.
a little bit jealous, but I'm in a good situation where I'm a little bit jealous.
I'm a little bit jealous of your spot, because I've been, you know, after being just the most ridiculous man whore for the past almost 2 years, I'm kind of transitioning into like, yeah, you know, I'm in my late 30s. It'd be nice to find something a little bit more long term and potentially start a family. So,
yeah.
So that's cool. Congrats.
Yeah, I'm pumped, man. I'm pumped. I'm looking at the, what's that thing called? The picture of the baby inside the womb. What is that damn thing called?
Sonogram or something?
Yeah. I got that sonogram on my desk, and I'm pumped, man. I can't wait to experience that. And, you know, as an NLP coach, I'm going to be very careful what I say to that little nugget, because obviously, you know, he or she, we don't know the gender yet, but he or she will be very impressionable. So, but I absolutely love helping guys. I kind of feel like that's my purpose. Actually, I do feel like that's my purpose, is to become the very best version of myself and help other men do the same thing. And I really feel like I'm accomplishing that with this NLP stuff that I'm doing. And it's extremely rewarding to see the success that my clients are getting.
Yeah. And tell us, where can guys find out more about you? I know you also have a podcast too, so give us all that info.
Oh, I appreciate it. So you can find me at Coach Mark Singh, and that's MarkSing. Again, that's CoachMarkSing.com. And it is typically 200 a session to work with me. Most sessions go over an hour. And but I'll knock it down to 147, since you will come from this podcast. Since you are listeners to Robbie's podcast, you can get in for 147. And it, you know, if you keep having the same situation where you're running into this same issue, and you just can't figure out what the hell is going on, and you feel like you have this sense inside you that says, I think it's something internally. I think it's something in my programming or in my childhood. There's something going on here that I just don't get. Reach out to me, man. Even if you want to ask me questions, my email is on that page, and you know, we'll see about working together. I also host the Unapologetic Man podcast with my co-host John Anthony, who has the website masculinedevelopment.com, and we kind of talk about, you know, being a man, being masculine, and not making apologies for it, which is a big thing that's going on right now in the United States. So we're kind of a counter movement to that whole, you know, Me Too bullshit. So
totally.
Yeah.
Awesome, yeah. Dude. Well, hey, it's been great having you on the show, and lots of great content for the guys. So I appreciate it.
Hey man, I appreciate you, bro. And it's funny because it always seems like every time I speak to somebody who's in the same niche, like you and I have never met. We've literally said two words to each other before we press play on this podcast. Every time I meet somebody who's into this, I always feel like, boom, we're just on the same wavelength. I can just talk to them like I've known them for 20 years. And that's what's great about this niche. You know, that's what's great about self-improvement is you get those social skills where you can just relate to people you've literally never met before. So I would love for you to come on to our podcast. It obviously reflects and it shows that you're kicking ass in life and living up to the podcast that you host. So I really appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. Thanks, brother. And, yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's great to talk to guys who are aware enough to realize that, you know, shit, there's stuff I can improve in life and I should do that because there's so many people out there who are just kind of wandering around asleep. So
yep.
For sure. All right. Awesome. Well, let's talk soon. And, thanks for being on.
All right. Will do, my brother. Talk soon.
See ya. Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.